Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, March 6th, 2025. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Idaho Governor Brad Little signs $250 million income tax break. Little also signs local preemption bill banning local governments, schools, and health districts from having mask mandates during a pandemic. Idaho voter suppression bills from previous years succeed in reducing youth vote, helping extremists solidify control in the Idaho legislature. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Reports. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Governor Brad Little signed House Bill 40 today, enacting a $250 million income tax cut, which is the largest income tax cut in state history. On Tuesday, the Idaho Senate passed the bill in a 27-8 vote. House Speaker Republican Mike Moyle of Star and Majority Leader Representative Jason Monks of Meridian sponsored the bill, which cuts corporate and individual flat income tax rates from 5.965% to 5.3%, eliminates the capital gains tax on precious metal bullion, and expands tax exemptions on some military pension income. Little said in a press release, Idaho families and businesses need and deserve to keep more of their hard-earned money. It is the right thing to do. Idaho's continued strength comes from our focus on good government and the Idaho taxpayer. I appreciate my partners in the legislature for sharing our goal of prioritizing tax relief while taking care of the needs of the growing state. As we continue to deliver historic tax relief, we must ensure our budget balances as the Idaho Constitution requires. According to a report by the Idaho Center for Fiscal Policy, under House Bill 40, a household earning between $55,600 and $91,000 would save around $127 on average in state income taxes. Households earning up to $146,000 would average about $264 in savings. The bill is one of a number of several recent tax cut bills, including House Bill 304, which advanced out of the House Tuesday and would provide $100 million in property tax relief and school facility funding. On Wednesday, the Senate also passed a bill to put $50 million toward increasing the grocery sales tax credit. The grocery sales tax credit in that case would increase from $120 to $155. Last week, Little also signed the $50 million school choice tax credit bill, which allows families to receive a refundable tax credit for educational expenses, including private and religious school tuition. Altogether, the tax-related bills total around $450 million. On Tuesday during debate, there were concerns about the state reducing its revenue amid economic uncertainty. Senators noted a preliminary report from the Division of Financial Management showed Idaho was around $50 million behind in projections for February and nearly $60 million behind revenue projections year to date. Those who voted against the bill, including Democrat Melissa Wintrow of Boise, said it was irresponsible, especially at a time of ongoing economic turmoil. Wintrow also pointed out those who will benefit most from the flat tax reduction will be Idahoans who are already wealthy, and it won't do much for working families. Idaho Governor Brad Little has signed House Bill 32, which takes away local government's right to save lives by having a mask mandate during a pandemic. Freshman Republican Representative Robert Beiswanger of Horseshoe Bend proposed the bill this year that now prohibits the state, local governments, including school and health districts, from imposing mask ordinances as a way of preventing deaths from a pandemic virus. The bill has certain exceptions, which would allow mask rules in job settings where masks are required or needed, quote, to perform required job duties, unquote, such as healthcare, working with hazardous materials, or industrial settings, quote, where respiratory protection is vocationally required. The bill passed in the House 51-7 and 27-6 in the Senate, where the sponsor was Republican Senator Brian Lenny of Nampa. All Senate Democrats voted against the bill, along with Republican Jim Guthrie of McCammon. Here's what Democratic Senator Melissa Wintrow of Boise said on the Senate floor when the chamber voted on the bill in late February.
I love that motto, my body, my choice. I wish it was true here in Idaho for me.
But we're debating this bill.
Thank you, Mr. That's President, for the reminder. I just would like to remind the folks here today that there's another side. There are many sides to this issue. And there were many people when this pandemic hit. I can remember I was serving in the House at that time, and people were afraid. And the local governments and folks, they got together, they did the best they could. And the least invasive way to prevent the spread of an airborne infection was a mask. And that was the easiest, least intrusive thing we could do. And so I would suggest that a lot of people actually valued that and were trying to stay safe. It wasn't a conspiracy, and it wasn't a way to, you know, harm kids. So I would encourage us to think about, you know, local control, local governments, and not tying their hands, especially schools and so forth, where you have people and big crowds, as ways to prevent the spread of an infectious disease.
That was Democratic Senator Melissa Wintrow of Boise. More than 5,500 Idahoans died of COVID and 1.7 million died nationwide. Moscow had a mask ordinance during the height of the pandemic, which city officials said saved lives and allowed businesses to open that would otherwise would have had to stay closed. The Centers for Disease Control had recommended mask wearing through much of the pandemic, saying it was most effective if both the person exhaling a virus and the person potentially inhaling the virus were wearing masks. States with mask mandates throughout the pandemic had lower death rates than states that did not impose them statewide. If another pandemic similar to COVID were to hit, the legislature would have to repeal the law in order to save lives. In 2023, Governor Little signed another bill that puts Idahoans at risk in case of another pandemic. The bill took away the right of business owners to have a vaccine mandate as a condition for employment, even during a pandemic, and prohibits venues from having vaccine rules as a condition of entry. The bill also took away the right of employees to have a safe workplace. There is currently another bill going through the legislature this year, sponsored by Republican Senator Dan Foreman of Moscow, that would expand the vaccine mandate ban to any health intervention as a condition of employment. The bill has exceptions for professions where mask wearing is normally required. The Idaho House today approved a bill that would move the entire Medicaid program in Idaho to a third-party managed care organization that would allocate and oversee benefits. The bill from Republican Representative Jordan Redman of Coeur d'Alene would end the current system of using value care organizations, which are led by physicians and hospital organizations, to manage benefits. The bill has a work requirement that requires Medicaid recipients between the ages of 19 and 64 to work 20 hours per week to be eligible. There would be exceptions for caretakers responsible for children younger than six, parents or caretakers caring for a dependent with a serious medical condition or disability, those receiving unemployment compensation, participating in a drug or alcohol treatment program, or attending college, university, or vocational school at least part-time. The bill would also end presumptive eligibility for people who arrive at a hospital who are likely eligible for Medicaid. It would also give the Idaho Health and Welfare Department director authority to cut costs if the federal government reduces payment matches on Medicaid expansion. Currently, the federal government pays 90%. Redman introduced House Bill 138 as a replacement for a previous bill that would have required the shutting down of Medicaid expansion, which serves about 89,000 Idahoans who make too much to receive regular Medicaid, but too little to be eligible for subsidized health insurance through the Affordable Care Act, if 11 conditions were not met. Critics of that bill said if passed, it would have almost inevitably required the shutdown of expanded Medicaid because one of the requirements would have been the reduction of expanded Medicaid from the nearly 90,000 people it currently serves to 50,000 by early next year, or Medicaid expansion would be permanently revoked. The vote on Redmond's new bill in the House today was 61-9. Redmond said, "In many ways, I believe this is a broader bill that addresses the entire $5.2 billion Medicaid budget and creates very good savings and sustainability for our state." The Idaho Press reports there was limited debate on the House floor. During an earlier committee hearing, Democratic House Minority Leader Elena Rubel of Boise expressed concerns about the work requirement, noting Arkansas had a work requirement for Medicaid expansion that a court halted. Rubel said Arkansas disenrolled a quarter of its Medicaid population because of paperwork, even though 95% of those disenrolled met the work requirement. Rubel said, "This is not about requiring people to work. It's about requiring people to navigate very extensive paperwork proving it, and people run afoul of paperwork. When you have all these working people kicked off Medicaid, they turn up at hospitals, they have no insurance. We're right back where we were before Medicaid expansion." You're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is made possible in part by support from KRFP members and
John's Alley Tavern, Moscow's home of live music. John's Alley is located at 114 East 6th Street in downtown Moscow.
The League of Women Voters of Idaho and the Boise-based youth voting rights organization Babe Votes are part of a lawsuit against the state saying a recent voter suppression law prohibiting the use of student IDs for registration or identification at a polling place has reduced student turnout. House Bill 124 and House Bill 340, which the legislature passed and Governor Little signed in 2023, made the only valid form of ID for registering or voting an Idaho driver's license or ID, a passport, or a license to carry concealed weapons. According to the University of Idaho student newspaper The Argonaut, Babe Votes volunteer Sam Sandmeyer says it has been unable to help 20-30% of students complete their voter registration. Many students and faculty who recently moved to Idaho found it nearly impossible to register to vote or to actually vote because of the Idaho driver's license or ID requirement. In the past, election officials accepted out-of-state driver's licenses as identification as long as the potential voter had proof that they now resided in Idaho. But Idaho driver's licenses can take time to get, and they cost money. A joint press release from the League of Women Voters of Idaho and Babe Votes reports between 2020 and 2024, voter registration among 18 to 29-year-olds in Idaho dropped by more than 3%, and registration among 18 and 19-year-olds dropped 23%. The Idaho League of Women Voters is getting involved in this lawsuit. They also sued previously with the Idaho State Supreme Court, who threw out that previous lawsuit. The Washington Attorney General's Office has joined a national lawsuit to block the Trump administration's efforts to fire probationary federal employees. The court filing says the Trump-Musk dismantling has already resulted in the firing of 1,000 federal employees in Washington. 76,000 Washington residents currently work for the federal government. Washington Attorney General Nick Brown issued a statement yesterday saying many of the president's power grabs have this problem in common. They're illegal. These firings don't save the public a dime, but they do make government less responsive, particularly in the communities across the nation where these employees live and serve.
Washington State's Tribal Foundational Public Health Service is the first dedicated funding for tribes to advance public health initiatives. In Governor Bob Ferguson's proposed budget, it faces the risk of losing crucial funding. Jessica McKee is with the American Indian Health Commission, which serves on the Tribal FPHS Steering Committee. She says after the state increased funding for the service in the last biennium to $200,000 per year per tribe, some tribes were able to create their first dedicated public health position. She says cuts to the service would be a blow.
If there's a reduction and the steering committee decides that some of that money has to come back from the tribes, they might not be able to maintain their public health person anymore. And that's a big deal.
McKee says the tribal FPHS funds foundational aspects of public health, such as tracking maternal and child health, environmental health, and communicable disease surveillance. With a recently confirmed measles case in King County, McKee is concerned that potential loss of funding for tribal FPHS coupled with the Trump administration's policies on immunizations could create a significant public health challenge.
If those funding streams are to be cut on top of people being vaccine hesitant, we could have a perfect storm of MMR breakouts all over the place.
McKee says a strength of the tribal FPHS is that the funding is flexible and each tribe chooses its own public health priorities. Some tribes may be able to expand existing efforts such as training clinic staff and infection prevention. Others may use new resources to hire public health staff to write health codes.
It is one of the opportunities for funding that really feels like it's honoring tribal sovereignty, and that's not always the case with funding.
I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, clear skies through tomorrow, low 28 tonight, high 48 tomorrow. Partly cloudy Friday night and Saturday, low 30, high 52. Mostly cloudy Saturday night, low 34. And partly sunny, high 56 on Sunday. 20% chance of rain after 10 p.m. Sunday night. Snow level 5,400 feet, lowering to 4,500 feet after midnight. Mostly cloudy, low 37. And a 30% chance of rain and snow on Monday. Snow level 3,500 feet, mostly cloudy, high 46. Currently 38 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Brenda Cox assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online. Flashpoints is coming up next in the 6:30 to 7:30 slot. At 7:30, we'll have Appearing Locally, where we'll feature music from artists that are appearing in the Moscow Pullman area in the near future. And at 8 o'clock, Rude Awakenings on the air, live in the studios, 8 to 9:30 tonight. Also, the Academy is in to play music for you on the Not Dark Yet show, 9:30 till 11 tonight. And we've got recorded jam band concerts from the past on The Ride, 11 p.m. till 1 a.m. Music, entertainment, information throughout your evening here at KRFP Moscow Pullman. Have a good night.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by Giant Palouse Earthwork, providing DIY music booking in Moscow and Pullman, focusing on extreme metal, punk, hardcore, and the avant-garde. Giant Palouse Earthworm is available on Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube. Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Rembrandt Tree Care, family owned and operated since 1977. A conscientious approach to urban forestry with year-round tree service on the Palouse and surrounding areas. You can reach Rembrandt Tree Care at 509-330-0699.
KRFP thanks all of its donors and underwriters for helping make this programming possible.
Why do prisons resemble slavery? I'm Bill Newman for the Civil Liberties Minute. First, because prisons disproportionately subjugate people of color. Indeed, the percentage of black people in prison is over twice that of the percentage of blacks in the general population. And the percentage of white people, conversely, is half their percentage in the general population. How did we get here? One obvious factor, the so-called wars on crime and on drugs that has led to mass incarceration. The United States prison population, less than 200,000 in 1970, ballooned to 10 times that number by 2010. Today, the prison population is still close to 2 million, which gives the United States a larger percentage of its population locked up than any other developed country. One great irony, the post-Civil War 13th Amendment, which abolished slavery and involuntary servitude, but which made an exception for, quote, punishment for a crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted. After the Civil War, black codes imprisoned black people for the crimes of essentially being black, and the war on drugs, a century later, did essentially the same thing. Ironically, the legal basis for incarceration and mass incarceration is the exception in the 13th Amendment, the amendment that was intended to abolish slavery and did, but which enshrined a system that allowed for slavery by another name. The Civil Liberties Minute is made possible by the ACLU because freedom can't protect itself.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. The ocean absorbs almost a third of the world's climate warming carbon pollution, so it plays a critical role in limiting global warming. And scientists are researching ways to help the ocean absorb and store even more CO2. Alicia Karspek is with Seaworthy, a nonprofit research group that's investigating a method called ocean alkalinity enhancement. The approach involves adding certain crushed minerals, like lime or silicate, to the ocean. That increases the water's alkalinity, triggering a chemical process that converts dissolved carbon dioxide into a molecule called bicarbonate. The carbon then stays locked in this form for thousands of years.
It's actually a natural process that happens already on very long geologic timescales, and it's a matter of just accelerating that natural process.
Doing so reduces the amount of dissolved CO2 at the ocean surface,
which then allows the ocean to actually take up more carbon from the atmosphere.
Her group is partnering on research to study the approach and monitor its impact on marine ecosystems and ocean chemistry. There are many questions to answer before it can be deployed on a large scale, but it could one day provide a way to help reduce climate change.